And all the recorders were busy. Okay, I think we're back now. I'll just state again that this is the Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force call on Monday, March 6th. We just mentioned the IP note, and that's that this is an open community call, and if you intend to do any more work and make more contributions to our standards, then you should join the CCG group and sign the IPR agreements. This call is recorded, and so everything on this call is archived. We do use the chat to cue speakers during our call, and you can add yourself to the queue by typing Q+, or you can click the hand in the lower part of Jitsi, and that will add you to the queue in the chat, or you can hit Q- or lower your hand using the interface in Jitsi if you want to pull yourself out of the queue. Okay, first, let's start with some introductions. Is there anybody here who's new to the call or who's been attending and would like to say hello and tell us what they're working on? Okay, Mariana, welcome.
Hi, I'm new. I see a couple of familiar names. I'm with the Arizona State University, and I work on ASU Pocket with John Kuo.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. Justin.
Hi, just introducing myself, Justin Mason, been involved in Open Badges, Open Recognition for a while, and just been meaning to come here for a long time. So hello.
Hey, Justin, great to see you here. Justin, if you don't mind, I'm gonna put you on the spot. Will you tell folks a little bit about the Open Recognition group that you've been working on?
Yeah, happy to. So the Open Recognition, we have an Open Recognition work group as part of the Open Skills Network, and we meet every 2 weeks and talk about how the skills infrastructure that OSN is helping to build, how we can make that more open and more inclusive and more equitable. And we've got several projects that are always in the works, and everyone and every folks are welcome to join, very welcome. So yeah, happy to share a link if I can figure out. This is my first time in Jitsi too, so I can share a link if I can figure out how.
Yes, please do. Yeah, you can put it just right in the chat. That would be great. Thank you. Great to see you here. Ian, you are next. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Ian Davidson from Smart Resume, joining Andy Griebel, who's often on these calls. I haven't been on this particular call in well over a year, so ducking back in and just wanted to say hi.
Great. Thanks. Nice to see you here. Okay. I don't see anybody else in the queue. Our next topic is to do any sort of announcements and reminders. I don't have anything to add here, although I know that we will be making announcements about PlugFest 3 soon. So stay tuned for that. So that is all that I have. Does anybody else have any announcements that they'd like to make this morning or today? All right. I know there's a lot going on and there's a lot of conferences that are going to start happening soon. So I'm sure we'll have those updates in the near future. Okay. So today what we wanted to talk a little bit about was the One EdTech conference. We just wanted to start there, and then that will lead, I'm sure, right into the Randa presentation. So I was wondering if you attended the One EdTech Digital Summit, if you could hop on the queue and tell us a little bit about it. I know that many people on this call often are at the summit. I wasn't able to attend, so I would love to hear more about it. I'm sure others would too.
Sorry, I missed the part about how to hop on the queue, but I did attend.
You did. You could raise your hand in the lower, or you can add Q+, like this in the chat. But great, yeah. Tell us all about it. How was it?
It was good. So it was my first time to attend this conference. I'm relatively new to the space and to the team. I've only been working on Pocket and in digital credentialing space since September of last year. The conference was great. I thought there was clearly, obviously the organizers talked a lot about the OBV3 and CLR2 formats. They presented the updates, which to me sounded like they are moving in a, you know, in a solid direction. There was a whole lot of conversation. I basically felt like there were two parts to the conference. One was around the whole pipeline from micro-credentialing and transitioning into employment. So whether it's micro-credentials in general, whether it's verified credentials or skills-based hiring into employers. My main outtake has been that the only instance where micro-credentialing of any kinds or digital credentialing currently works successfully end-to-end leading to employment is if employers co-create or create the programs that are then being credentialed. I think that conversation is kind of a standalone conversation that so basically may or may not be facilitated by digital credentials in the space that we all are. So those are kind of my main outtakes. I saw a lot of colleges, doing the work and had conversations with many colleges who are starting to transition into some sort of credentialing. It currently doesn't go too far past the badging of milestones within the course or some extracurricular, co-curricular activities. The interesting session was with, our ARCO, the Board of Regents, governing body association has issued a guidance to use CLR2 as the, format for, migrating transcripts into digital form. And, Tennessee Board of Regents has done, made a big progress, but they actually did make, move all their transcripts to CLR. And then Arkansas also is moving in that direction. This is kind of broad strokes, I guess.
Yeah, those are some great things to know. Thank you very much, Marianne. I appreciate that. Susan, you have the floor. Susan, if you are speaking, you are not unmuted right now. Okay. Susan, we can come back to you if you'd like. Okay. Anybody else who's at One Ed Tech would like to share their thoughts? David.
Hi. Yeah, I definitely agree with all the things Marianna said. I thought it was a good conference. We've gone the last few years and significant growth, I think, in the space and especially university participation. I think it was sort of, for me, bookended by a minus and a plus. Sean Gallagher from Northeastern presented their latest research on basically, is HR tech ready for micro-credentials? And a pretty detailed no came out of that presentation. A lot of structural and technology barriers to external micro-credentials, the ones not created by companies, making it all the way through to the hiring managers and the hiring process. So highlight a lot of challenges there. But on the flip side, EDL, EdLX, University of Dayton, and University of Melbourne presented some research they did on sort of more of the student side and how learners feel about micro-credentials. And they showed that 76% of learners feel more confident expressing their skills when they get these micro-credentials. So even if it's not a formal part of the hiring process, they feel like they get sort of a career boost out of just getting the micro-credential itself. So that was a promising sign.
That is a promising sign. By any chance, do you have a link to that research?
Yep. Yeah, I'll pop it into the chat.
Thank you. Love to check that out. Hey, Susan, how are your mute issues going?
We'll see.
Oh, there you are. Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay, great. I think I must have said no somewhere along the line. So this was my first experience in the, kind of ed tech space moving over from healthcare. And so I found the conference to be a really nice mix of audiences. So there was a great deal of technical, and even highly technical conversations. There was a lot of standards conversations, a lot of product, roadmaps, a lot of how the different products kind of come together, I think, in order to create an end-to-end solution that I found to be very valuable. And then just the passion of the people to really, of all the different groups, to try to work together to see what they can do from kind of their angle in order to advance the narrative and the capabilities that are being brought to bear, especially as we get to the point where we can actually mix them in an end-to-end experience and actually create a full experience. So it's really exciting and a lot of really great opportunity to network and meet people in these sessions as well. So I really enjoyed it.
That sounds great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated to learn what will happen between this year and next year. Now that Open Badges V3 is out and CLR V2 is out and implementations are starting, and we're going to start seeing some end-to-end implementations because we've already had the Plugfest to demonstrate how that works. I'm curious to see how next year will go. It's interesting to hear about the panels that reflect the work that's going on.
And Carrie, if I can just, add one more thing. I went to ETH Denver or ETH Denver right after that. And it was really interesting to see as like a selling point, some of the newer blockchain companies advertising as new features and new feature releases that they were incorporating, verified credentials. And so that kind of cross, industry, I guess, excitement, coming from like highly, folks involved in like blockchain identity to recognize the need to, incorporate standards and incorporate some of the content that's coming through these types of working groups. It was really exciting to see that as a selling point and something that they wanted to announce.
You mean that they're using verifiable credentials like the standard verifiable credentials?
Correct. And have incorporated into like the latest version of, I think it's Polygon, that's doing like cross chain identity management and just them up there. Actually, there's three or four sessions that I went to really pushing verified credentials on blockchain. So it was really nice to see that continuity of what work a lot of the folks on this call are doing, either to drive or to advance, and then seeing that cross into the blockchain space as like selling points.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. That's great news. Thank you, Susan. Naomi, I think I thought I saw you pop up in the queue here.
Hi there. Yes, I did pop up for just a second, and I wanted to follow on some of the initial thoughts raised and also that David raised as well. My main takeaway from the event is still how much opportunity we have and also work we have to do to connect the pockets of work that have really gotten going, where I kind of got the sense that there's a lot of pockets of innovation and really strong application of use cases and follow through end to end, but that there are a few roadways really connecting that work. And that goes back to the broad sense of whether employers are ready to receive, credentials outside of the examples that they themselves are directly involved with and help structure. And so, my big takeaway is for us to really think as a community on how to better forge the connections, build out the interoperabilities and really work together to have not just islands of digital credentials in use, but really to empower the individuals to be able to, travel the world with them.
Thank you, Naomi. Those are great points. I'm going to put a link here to an article about a report that we did at DCC, got released I think this summer, that is about working with employers. That kind of aligns with what I'm hearing. You've all heard at One in Tech last week. Okay. Thank you all very much. That was very informative and helpful. Next, I'm going to introduce Marty Reed from Randa. Marty, I believe you were also at OneEd Tech, so maybe this is a good segue to talk about maybe your experiences, and then you could tell us more about the work you're doing at Randa.
Sure. Thanks, Carrie. Yeah, and as far as the One EdTech conference, I mean, I think there's a lot more maturity across many different parts of the ecosystem. You know, you see more players at the table with more compliant, interoperable platforms and willing to work on interoperability. Whereas I think in the past we haven't heard a lot of really leaning into interoperability. And I think it's partially due to the work done here, in the BC Edu work group, as well as that aligning with, the BC work group and the CLR and Open Badge work groups. So what I'm going to talk about today is kind of a rehash of what I presented at One EdTech, because thinking through it, we have a lot of very talented technical folks on this call, and I would feel kind of ignorant presenting technical specs to this crowd. So instead, what I'm going to do is, again, present what I presented at the One EdTech conference, which is really the why around CLR2, kind of some of the transitions between CLR1 and CLR2, and give you some use cases as far as how that plays into real-world applications. And so for those of you that were at my talk, you can go ahead and take a nap or make or something new. So I'm going to talk about why CLR2, and hopefully you can see my screen. Yes.
Yes, you can see it.
So we did an initial implementation of CLR1, and that initial implementation is an open source project housed at IEEE SA Open, the Open Credential Publisher project that was done in collaboration with North Dakota. And we learned a number of things. North Dakota, PCG, and actually 17 other collaborative parties at that collab, and it's still going on now. So I won't get into that. But a few things that we had to overcome as a team. One is kind of the dynamic population of the CLR package. So early on in the work, it was discovered that a transcript is not. So this was around the K-12 transcript from the statewide system in North Dakota. And what we learned was that transcript does not look the same for every single student. And so you have to kind of create a dynamic population of that CLR package so that it can dynamically expand and contract. And that presents some limitations in how you implement that further down the road. The next piece was we actually needed to make it a verifiable credential. So this was 2 years ago, roughly, that the CLR1 was signed as a JWT and created a verifiable credential. And that partially led to the CLR2 spec moving forward and aligning with OB3 work that Carrie, Dimitri, a number of other parties on this call were leaders, and if I missed you, apologies. But what we learned, there's some pretty decent technical differences between JWT and JWS as far as size of credential, the signing mechanisms, and then systems were not ready and somewhat still are not ready for a compound or stackable credential. And then finally is size limitations of network. Some of these early blockchain ecosystems were designed for a single assertion credential. They were designed for a very simple credential to be exchanged. And what was produced from that transcript was not a simple credential. And so it kind of helped push on the market a bit. That prompted a sub work group in the VCEDU work group around a complex or compound credential. To just say that, yes, this is a thing. So the two main goals, I think, of kind of the movement to CLR2 and OB3 was, one, to align the two standards, to make the two standards interoperable. Again, our open source project did this, where an OB3 can be put in a collection in that collection is a CLR. So you can create relationships between the assertions with CLR. So if we want to go down the road of why not a verifiable presentation, one is, you know, verifiable presentation is ephemeral. Then two is that you can have associations between assertions in the CLR and that persist into consuming systems. Then secondly is make it interoperable with the verifiable credential standard. So the work group, you know, there's a lot of everybody's everywhere in these conversations. And so it was obvious that you needed to align with the verifiable credential standard. So now I'm going to get into just a quick rundown of three use cases of how this can actually be applied. So first off is kind of the environment of student teaching. So there are many internal requirements that must be met for an institution to place a student in a classroom, and there's multiple exchanges. I'm going to show you a little bit of that. Then secondly is the teaching license. So we think of a license as your driver's license or a diploma that says one thing about you. That's not true in most licenses. So, for example, one state may have three license types and then 3,000 endorsements that can be placed in those licenses. The other is that you could have, you know, 3,600 different licenses, each with its own unique endorsement. And then I can hold one or many of those licenses. And then finally, what we're going live with later on this year is kind of connecting EVP to vacancy in school districts. So direct connections typically require complex data sharing agreements unless the user is the one facilitating the transaction. And so that's the foundation. So this is a quick, I'm not going to go into this, but this is a quick representation of what happens in placing a student in a classroom as a student teacher and getting their license. So each one of these arrows represents a point of friction, and any place that you can reduce that friction speeds up the time to live, connecting that student teacher, into the classroom. So I just show this to show there's multiple parties exchanging data, and each one of these can represent a verifiable credential, exchange between these parties. Secondly is just a real world, representation of a teaching license. And the reason for this is I just want to show folks how complex, how much detail there is just in a single license. And this is our description for those Mississippi educators, just for them to understand what's on the page. So if you think about it, you think about, okay, well, we're just kind of transitioning from paper to electronic format. Yes, but in each of those implementations, you have to educate the market and educate the users in how to use that. The interesting thing about showing this with ed prep program providers is they said, well, we want the nice, pretty, pretty license that we used to get. And the head of the licensing department said, well, here's the problem with that is that paper was only as good as the day it was printed. And so we added that origination, to the physical license. And then under that is a QR code that simply links to the public lookup information to validate a license. So there's no VC in that. It's simply a link, kind of meeting them where they're at today. And then finally is, you know, what does that all lead to? Well, that leads to EPPs exchanging, data with districts and then exchanging those data, other data with, state systems. But thinking a little bit outside the box of what a credential can represent, the idea of a teaching position credential that a district can you know, issue, not award, and allowing them to issue and not award that credential allows for us to identify the relationship with a potential candidate into that position. So you have a student teacher position connected with a mentor teacher credential. And so all of this is a complete ecosystem of, you know, candidate provider, licensing body, employer, all together. And so we will be moving this forward in a couple of states with, you know, tens of thousands of users here in the next probably 6 months. And that'll all be based on CLR2 and OB3 standard, alongside the verifiable credential. So what we've experienced in this kind of transition from CLR1, OB2 to, you know, to where we're at today, is really a lot of education in the market. Education, and when I say market, I'm not talking about the people in this room, because this room already knows all this stuff. What I'm talking about is the end users and why they would want to use this. And ultimately, it comes down to reducing friction. So if in any case where you can apply technology to reduce friction for the end user, for the licensing body, for the provider, you have a real world benefit that they can relate to. And so then, you know, 2022 to 2024 is really adoption and implementation. Here's a few, just kind of a couple of risks of adoption that we've seen in this. One is there's already systems and people that do this thing. So why do we need another thing to log into in the first place? And so we're talking about reducing friction. You cannot add another element of a thing that I have to do. Even in our experience with some of these statewide systems, even adding one button click is a very, very contentious action in some of these systems. And so you really have to make it easy. And then two is I want it to be difficult for someone to leave my ecosystem. And that one we've kind of overcome over a number of years, but that was one of the very first arguments was I control and really own this license data. Why would I want to give them agency over this data? And so the ultimate argument there was, look, we're not promoting folks leaving your ecosystem. We're promoting folks coming into your ecosystem. So solving the reciprocity problem from the outside in. And then a benefit of that is that it goes from inside out as well. But the real pitch is, you know, we want to allow others to come in. The military spouse use case is a big one, and even military transitions back into the workforce. All of that, you know, is a big part of that risk too. But it is a very, very important area to pay attention to. So in terms of next step is really credentialize everything. So the recommendation, the license, the endorsement, the experience, the position. We're following, you know, BC was – you know, early adoption of VC was around supply chain. And so you have to make it as frictionless as supply chain in the credential ecosystem. Making it easy. So authoring CLRs today is difficult, requires expertise, and accessibility is critical for adoption. We all know that. But we're all trying to build on, you know, where the next layers of accessibility are, and making authoring easy is critical to that. And then continuing the education. So as many times as I tell the same story over and over again, over the past 3, 4, 5, 6, 12 years, you still have to tell that story again and again and again and again and again. And so that's where we kind of continue that education of the overall marketplace. So that's just kind of my quick rundown. Again, this is not a how, more of a why. But I will, I think I dropped the links for both of the standards and the implementation guides in the chat, and I'm happy to take questions. I see Phil Long in the queue.
Yes, before we call on Phil, Marty, thank you for that. One is, would you mind sharing a link to your slides at some point during the call? So we have those in the chat.
I cannot share those because they have some proprietary information on them. But I can strip down a version without the screenshots and share that.
Yeah, so, that would be fine. Something like that would be great. Thank you.
I can do that.
Okay, thanks. I'll call on Phil and then, I'll come back. Phil Long.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Thanks, Marty. That was a really helpful presentation summarizing some really terrific work, you and your colleagues have been doing. And I was intrigued by the discussion at the end about the adoption barriers, and you made the observation of sort of looking at the adoption from those concerned about giving away control of their data by mentioning that it was looking at it from the inside out, and and adding less friction for people to enter the system as a sort of counterbalance to the concerns that the loss of or the potential giving away of ownership or control of the data might be considered as threatening to that group. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that in terms of what do you mean by bringing more people into the system and how that might have mitigated the concern over the agency that they seem to be concerned about losing?
So it's very kind of, so there's a huge teacher vacancy challenge, throughout, you know, the United States and generally, over throughout the world. But, and so out of state licenses, for teachers, whenever you bring those in from other states, there are reciprocity agreements, and there's even a interstate compact agreement that's being worked on right now with teaching. But net-net, the out-of-state teaching license doesn't always get you a license in that new state. And it takes about 3 to 6 months to get that out-of-state license converted to an in-state license. And so you hear folks talk on you know, the Council of State Governments call, where a military spouse, she has 5 licenses in 5 states because it's easier to keep them than it is to get a new one. And so it's really about reducing the friction for those out-of-state license holders to be licensed in that state. And so when I talk about folks owning the data, I'm talking about the states. I'm not talking about the individuals so much. And so reducing the friction to get out-of-state licenses, out-of-state licensed individuals licensed in that state is a critical value in reducing that friction of, you know, 3 to 6 months of, do we accept this license? Do we accept the endorsements on this license? Do these endorsements map to our course codes? You know, and when in reality, the component parts of a license are typically actually reciprocal.
Thank you, Marty. That's helpful. I'm just a curious quick follow-up. Do you think this is unique in the sense that there is such a high demand at the moment, given the difficulty in attracting candidates in teacher education as well as many other jobs, that it's a somewhat an opportune time in a number of domains, in teacher education being one of them, for that argument to be made?
Yes. So another great use case actually was presented to me, and I didn't even think about it, but I was speaking with Andrew Fisher, who I know a number of folks on the call know, and he's actually doing some work in the towing industry. So it's not a licensed industry, but it's highly regulated. And so he has found a space in the towing industry where credentialing the drivers allows those towing companies to reduce their insurance liability and ultimately reduce their insurance costs. So I believe that there's actually a tremendous amount licensed and unlicensed verticals that have an opportunity to leverage these types of, you know, strategies to reduce friction in their industry, and that ultimately produces dollars in his case, real dollars for those towing companies to reduce their insurance liability and cost.
Ironically, I'm meeting with Andrew tomorrow, and that's
so you'll hear all about it.
So I'll hear all about it. So thank you for the heads up, so I can be more intelligent when the conversation starts.
Absolutely.
Great job, Marty.
Thanks, Phil and Marty. Marty, I put myself in the queue because even though many people on this call, like, you know, have heard a lot about open badges and CLR, it's my understanding that a lot of people don't understand the differences between the two. So I wonder if we could like back up all the way to the beginning of your presentation. And if you wouldn't mind sort of unpacking that a little bit and explaining the difference and the similarities now that the models are more aligned than they were before in previous versions.
Sure. And again, I feel really silly talking about this whenever Carrie LeMoy is on this call.
Stop.
but I'll go ahead and share that.
Wait, yeah, before you do, let me just say that Marty has been the co-chair of the CLR and really has been like very important to making sure that all of this work is aligned. So this is why I want him to explain it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you. So the company, well, let's just start with OpenBadge. So OpenBadge is really a single assertion. It aligns very well with the VC. Here you see kind of the graphic. And again, these are in the chat, but you have a single assertion, by an issuer about a subject, with a proof, and that can contain, you know, achievement results, evidence, the recipient of that, assertion, any alignments, maybe like, for instance, in the CTDL alignments, and descriptions. So then the CLR is actually just a wrapper around that type of assertion. And so you have, the CLR, that can have one or many assertions embedded in it. Each one of those assertions is a VC itself. So you have, you know, a VC with VCs in it. Now, I will admit and, you know, say that some of this is not as elegant, as some of the presentations that we've seen in this work group as far as a multi-assertion, VC credential. At the time, this was the frictionless, least friction, to get to a VC alignment. So it is a VC with VCs in it. And I did mention, you know, why is a CLR not a VP? It's not a VP because VPs do not, are ephemeral and do not persist. Now they could in the future, it may change. And we're open to that discussion, but today this is the case. So the other piece that none of those components, host or manage is the associations. Between those assertions. So you have a parent-child relationship available in the CLR spec, which is very important. Whenever you look at, again, the license that I mentioned where you have multiple endorsements associated with that license, that's going to be really a multiple assertions because those endorsements are used in relation to that license and external to that license. They're going to be used as a relationship between a single course code, for example. Another piece around CLRs, you can have multiple signers. And so in the assertions themselves, they can be signed by another party that the VC is not signed. So if you think about self-signed credentials, this gives you the opportunity to do that, i.e. I've packaged up these credentials signed by these other parties, and I have signed this as a verifiable credential. So at a very, very high level, that's kind of how they relate. And really kind of moving OpenBadge out of that, just strictly micro credential, framework into a general assertion. So you could do a license. If it was just a simple, very simple license, you could do a license as a badge. As an open badge, sorry. Skip that. So there are opportunities now to kind of remove some of the micro credential, nomenclature around open badges and simply make it an assertion, of a credential.
Yeah. Thanks, Marty. Thanks for aligning that a bit for us. Were you going to go on? Am I interrupting you?
Sorry. Nope. That was kind of a sum. I know everybody can read. So your, the specifications are out there and, you know, happy to entertain any other experts that were in the room in the development of that. You know, again, I see names like Dimitri and David Ward that were deep in this work as well. So if there's anything that you guys think I'm should speak up.
Thanks, Marty. Yeah, and does anybody have any questions about this topic, about the CLR, and about open badges, you know, how they can work together and, you know, what Marty just described. Because I think my understanding is that some people are trying to figure out, you know, which one they should use. And it's a good question.
Yep. That is a good question. I agree. And it's difficult, I think, today, right now, to make that decision easily. So I agree with you. It is kind of difficult. Phil.
Yeah. I'm just asking, I guess, for some, recollections about the complexity of the alignments that CLRV2s can contain, and anything that in your experience working with them, is there anything that would help? I mean, it seems like one of those arcane spaces that registrars spend years trying to understand themselves, and since they are alignments often that are representing rule sets about what combinations of courses for a major, for example, are necessary, and some of it is in terms of precedence and sequence, and some of it is in terms of other areas. Is there anything from your extensive work in this space that might help people when they interpret or try to interpret building these alignments?
Ooh, that is a deep subject. So I will say, you know, one is there's two expressions. One is an alignment, which is kind of a target framework, if you will, you know, like CTDL or case, server or something to that effect. And then there's associations. And that association gives you kind of that parent-child relationship.
Yeah, I may have been conflating the two in confusing ways when I was speaking.
But I think it does actually align pretty well with what the current constraints are in the marketplace. So you have the idea of pathways. Those pathways have relationships in between individual credentials. And so in order to actually assert that pathway in the right way, you do need associations, between those credentials. And it's easier to kind of, you know, inspect, or interrogate, those credentials with those associations in place. Sharon?
Yes.
Jared?
Hi, Marty. I just have a quick question about how hard is it to make the transition to CLR2? We heard earlier that a lot of announcements are being made about how CLR is becoming the standard for transcripts. I'm curious, like, whether that conversation has started or whether people are just going to onboard themselves into CLRV1 and then eventually make the transition over.
Yeah, so great question, Sharon. I mean, I would just give you kind of our use case. So we were discussing like how to, you know, kind of architect the CLR2 from scratch, you know, as far as producing a CLR2, but, you know, with a few modifications to naming conventions, CLR1, we have a signing service that converts it to CLR2. And it doesn't necessarily convert it as much as it just signs it as a verifiable credential, and it signs each assertion as a verifiable credential. And that is a lot easier to do. So you can, with a little bit of, you know, machination, convert CLR1 pretty directly to CLR2. And that signing service may be an open source signing service here in a few months.
That would be so helpful, Marty. Thank you. So I don't see any other questions in the queue, but we have a little
answered
bit of time. You've so far have answered all of the questions, Marty.
Yay.
You did an excellent job. But I'll give folks like, you know, another minute here to see if there's anything else you can think of that you'd like to ask Marty at this time. Right, going forward, I'm sure we're going to be talking about more of these standards over the course of the year, and even more, because now we're heading into implementations, and it'll be really interesting to see what comes out of this.
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time, and just kind of from a global statement standpoint, how far the market has come in the past year. You know, I think it's equivalent to the previous 5 years. And I think we're on pace to do that again, for my particular crystal ball, which is cloudy most of the time. But the next 12 months, I think we'll have the same velocity, if not more, than the past 12, just due to, you know, PlugFest, the real collaborations here.
I think that's right, actually. And I think like this year and maybe next year will be, more implementations, maybe more platforms transitioning to the newer standards. And then I think we might start scaling. At least that's what I'm aiming for, is to try and get as many people interested as possible and see what those use cases are. And then we start, you know, scaling from there. And, yeah, I think you're right. It's been moving a lot faster lately.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we'll be implementing at least two scale, implementations. There's a link to the, non-proprietary slides in the chat. Sure. But yeah, I think there will be, you know, at least two. I know of four others, that are pretty well on their way. So, yeah, it's exciting times for sure.
Great, Marty. Thank you. Thanks for joining us today, for telling us about your work and CLR.
Thanks for the opportunity. And,
everybody else? Yeah, sure, of course. Anybody else? Everybody else, I'm sorry. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday. Thanks, all.
Thanks, all.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.